Hello, lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning in today. Jordan River here for Character Month, April 2021. And today I'm bringing you another life note, moving you one book closer to a 12-category smart life. Today's life note is Mastery by Robert Greene. As always, let's begin with a quote. Everyone holds his fortune in his own hands, like a sculptor, the raw material he will fashion into a figure. But it's the same with that type of artistic activity as with all others. We are merely born with the capability to do it. The skill to mold the material into what we want must be learned and attentively cultivated. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Core concept. In his book Mastery, Robert Greene seeks to demystify genius and help us unlock our own powers within. He walks us through the comprehensive, yet surprisingly simple process to tap into our own greatness and reach mastery. So let's dive into today's first big idea. Discovering our calling. Quote, "The first move towards mastery is always inward, learning who you really are and reconnecting with that innate force. The starting point on our journey towards mastery is discovering our life's task." Greene gives us a beautiful explanation of what our life's task is. Quote, "At your birth, a seed is planted. That seed is your uniqueness. It wants to grow, transform itself, and flower to its fullest potential. It has a natural, assertive energy to it. Your life's task is to bring that seed to flower, to express your uniqueness through your work. You have a destiny to fulfill. The stronger you feel and maintain it as a force, as a voice, or in whatever form, the greater your chance for fulfilling this life's task and achieving mastery." End quote. This force is weakened, however, when we give in to social pressures to conform. If we are uncomfortable expressing our uniqueness or feel that it will keep us from fitting into a group, we may suppress it to the point that we completely lose touch with it. Our behavior then becomes modeled on those of others. This is why so many of us choose a career that doesn't suit us. When this happens, we become less and less engaged in our work, losing that inner compass that should be guiding us. In order to avoid this fate, we must discover our life's task and follow it all the way to mastery. This discovery is a three-part process. The first step is inward. We must reconnect with our sense of uniqueness. To do this, we are to search the past for an inner voice or force that reveals an underlying pattern to our character. Next, once we have made this connection, we need to take a look at the career path that we are on. This is a critical stage in the process. Far too often, we compartmentalize our lives into work and life outside work. Work is something that we get through so that we can get on with our lives outside work, where we find real enjoyment and fulfillment. Instead, Greene wants us to see our work as part of our vocation, as something that calls to us from within and draws us to it. Our work should be a reflection of who we are. Finally, we must look at our career paths as more of journeys that have unique twists and turns rather than a straight line. We start by choosing a field that roughly corresponds to our desires and offers us room and opportunity to learn new skills. Once on the path, we will discover side roads and detours that will pique our interest and others that we will have no desire to follow. We make adjustments and continue to learn, all the while expanding our own skill base. Eventually, we will find a particular field or position that fits us perfectly, and everything will fall into place. We will learn more quickly, our skill levels will reach a point to where we're able to claim our own independence within the group that we work for, and we will determine our own circumstances, becoming our own master. Attaining our ideal apprenticeship. Quote, "The apprenticeship, by its very nature, must be conducted by each individual in his or her own way." End quote. The second step in attaining mastery is the apprenticeship. In all of the stories of the greatest masters, we see a phase in their lives when their skills were in development. During this largely self-directed apprenticeship, lasting around 5 to 10 years, their minds are transforming in ways that we can't see, but that contain all of the seeds of their future success. In studying how these masters navigate this stage of their development, we can see what they did right and learn some valuable lessons for ourselves. Upon close examination, we can see a pattern that transcends their various fields, revealing what Green refers to as an ideal apprenticeship. The lessons we learn in this ideal apprenticeship can be distilled down into one overarching principle. The principle is simple, but it's something that we should never forget. Quote, "The goal of an apprenticeship is not money, a good position, a title, or a diploma, but rather the transformation of your mind and character. The first transformation on the way to mastery." End quote. Typically, we enter our career as an outsider. Slowly, we learn how to navigate the objective world, learning how to work with others and accept criticism. During this process, we transform ourselves from someone who is scattered and inexperienced to someone who is disciplined and focused, ultimately mastering ourselves and our weaknesses. This phase can be loosely broken down into 3 steps, the first of which is deep observation, also known as the passive mode. When we enter into a career or new environment, we find ourselves in a world with its own rules, procedures, and social dynamic. Our first task upon entering this new place is to observe and absorb its reality as deeply as possible. Quote, "The greatest mistake you can make in the initial months of your apprenticeship is to imagine that you have to get attention, impress people, and prove yourself," end quote. Instead, we should be channeling all of our focus on learning and absorbing as much as possible. There are 2 realities that Green says are essential for us to observe during this phase. The first is the rules and procedures that govern success in our environment. The second is the power relationships that exist in our environment. Who's in control, who's on the rise, and who's on the decline. Understanding these different aspects will allow us to navigate our work environment successfully, avoiding costly mistakes. In addition, this ability to observe will become an important lifelong skill. The second step is skills acquisition, or the practical mode. As we move through our initial months of observation, we will pass into the most critical part of our apprenticeship, practice towards the acquisition of skills. The key here is to focus on one skill at a time. We must choose one to begin with that will serve us as the foundation for acquiring others. In these initial stages, we also must accept the tedium that comes along with learning new skills. We can't avoid it, so we need to learn to embrace it. This phase teaches us patience and helps us improve our concentration. The third and final step is experimentation, or the active mode. This is the shortest part of the process, but important nonetheless. Quote, "As you gain in skill and confidence, you must make the move to a more active mode of experimentation," end quote. This can involve a variety of things. We could take on more responsibility, initiate a new project, or even do some sort of work that will make us targets for the criticisms of our peers or even the public. The point is to gauge our progress and see if there are still gaps in our knowledge. When we feel that we have nothing left to learn in our environment, we will know our apprenticeship is over. Meeting our mentor. Quote, "The right mentors know where to focus your attention and how to challenge you," end quote. During our apprenticeship, Green urges us not only to acquire knowledge, but acquire it in the most efficient way possible. To do this, we will need mentors. Quote, "The reason you require a mentor is simple. Life is short. You have only so much time and so much energy to expend," end quote. We can learn from books and practice and our own experiences, but these approaches are either too time-consuming or not tailored to our specific needs. Finding a mentor won't give us a shortcut necessarily, but it will streamline our learning process. They can help steer us away from unnecessary errors, making our practice more efficient. But there is more to this relationship than just time saved. When we learn in a concentrated manner, it has more value. We have fewer distractions, and we internalize what we learn more deeply because of the intensity of our focus and practice. This mentor-protege relationship also has an emotional quality that makes it more productive. our mentor becomes emotionally invested in our work, making them an integral part of our support system. We are also able to build a rapport that allows us to question the underlying beliefs and theories upon which our mentor's work is based. While Green says having one mentor at a time is ideal, we're not always able to find the perfect mentor for us. In this case, he recommends finding several that can fill the various gaps in our knowledge and experience. This approach has the added benefit of providing us with several connections that we may be able to call upon later. Inevitably, we will have several mentors in the course of our life. They're like stepping stones on the way to mastery. Quote, at each phase of life, you must find the appropriate teachers, getting what you want out of them, moving on, and feeling no shame for this. End quote. Smoothing out our social skills. Quote, often the greatest obstacle to our pursuit of mastery comes from the emotional drain we experience in dealing with the resistance and manipulations of the people around us. End quote. The next step on our road to mastery involves learning to fine-tune our social skills. Green explains that we have a tendency to project our emotional needs onto those around us, building up either their positive or negative qualities and saturating our view of people with a variety of emotions. This eventually turns into a habit that we can hardly control. He calls this naive perspective. Although this perspective is natural, it is also dangerous because it distorts our view of the people around us. We carry this into our work environments where the stakes are suddenly raised. People are competing for livelihood. The pressure often reveals unsavory quality in people that they usually try to conceal. Quote, we are blindsided by this behavior and our emotions are churned up even more than before, locking us in to the naive perspective. End quote. When we get locked into this social behavior, we become insecure and vulnerable. We make unnecessary mistakes. We find ourselves entangled in battles and dramas that distract us from our learning. If we hang on to these childish attitudes, it is almost guaranteed that we won't be able to hang on to the success that we may achieve through our talent. Quote, social intelligence is nothing more than the process of discarding the naive perspective and approaching something more realistic, end quote. This involves focusing our attention outward instead of inward, honing our observational and empathetic skills that we naturally possess. We have to move past demonizing or idealizing those around us and see and accept them for who they really are. For most people, past this naive perspective, there are two components of social intelligence that we must master. The first is called specific knowledge of human nature, namely the ability to read people and to get a sense of how they view the world. This involves paying less attention to what people are saying and more attention to how they are saying it. We need to learn to pick up on people's nonverbal cues, such as their body language, the look in their eye, the tone of their voice. In general, we are reading and decoding every sign, including what they wear and the state of their workspace. What we're really looking for is a picture of someone's character over time, giving us a much truer sense of who they really are. The second is general knowledge of human nature, which means gathering an understanding of the overarching patterns of human behavior. Throughout recorded history, we can detect some human behaviors that transcend culture and time. Some of them are positive, but some are negative and can be quite destructive. Most of us possess these seven negative qualities: envy, conformism, rigidity, self-obsessiveness, laziness, fightiness, and passive aggression. The key here is to heighten our social intelligence so that we can detect their presence and avoid triggering them in the first place, in us and in others. Quote, developing social intelligence will not simply help you manage your relations with other people. Acquiring it will also have an immensely beneficial effect on your ways of thinking and your creativity in general. End quote. It is a key step on our road to mastery. Activating our original minds. Quote, as you accumulate more skills and internalize the rules that govern your field, your mind will always want to become more active, seeking to use this knowledge in ways that are more suited to your inclinations." End quote. The first transformation occurs during the apprenticeship phase. The second occurs here, during the activation of our original minds. When we're children, we take our environment in with utmost intensity. Colors seem more vibrant and alive. We have a powerful desire to turn everything into a game. Green calls this quality the original mind. Quote, "This mind looked at the world more directly, not through words and received ideas. It was flexible and receptive to new information." End quote. Masters and others who display a high level of creativity are simply people who manage to hang on to a bit of this childhood spirit, allowing it to manifest in their work and their way of thinking. But in addition to hanging on to this original mind, masters also add it to their years of apprenticeship. This, coupled with an ability to focus intensely on problems and ideas, leads to a high level of creativity. This means that while they have a deep understanding of their field, they keep their minds open to alternate ways of doing things and approaching problems. Green calls this the dimensional mind, an active mind that transforms everything it consumes, i.e. learns, into something new and original. This is the ultimate goal. The dimensional mind has two essential requirements. The first is a deep understanding of our field or subject. This knowledge prepares the ground for intense creativity, and it is acquired primarily during our apprenticeship. The second is the openness and flexibility to use our knowledge in new and original ways. Awakening this dimensional mind requires three steps. First, we must choose the right creative task, an activity that maximizes our skills and knowledge. Next, we are to open our minds through creative strategies, such as allowing for things that are unexpected and altering our perspective, among others. Finally, we need to create optimal mental conditions for breakthrough or insight. That is, we must learn how to let go of the idea or project that we're laboring over, which will inevitably lead to an aha moment. Reaching mastery. Quote, "This power is what our brains were designed to attain. We will be naturally led to this type of intelligence if we follow our inclinations to their ultimate ends." End quote. We have reached the final stage where the final transformation takes place and where we achieve mastery. Throughout history, we read about masters describing a feeling of suddenly possessing heightened intellectual powers after years of submersion in their field. They describe it as seeing more or as an intuition. Quote, "Through years of intense absorption in a particular field over a long period of time, masters come to understand all of the parts involved in what they are studying. They reach a point where all of this has become internalized and they're no longer seeing the parts, but gain an intuitive feel for the whole." End quote. We can do this too. This ability to grasp the whole of what we are studying is simply a function of time. In the phases leading up to this one, we should be spending tens of thousands of hours practicing our skills. This many hours of practice causes a physical transformation in our brains, forging all kinds of connections between different forms of knowledge. By this time, we have a sense of how everything interacts organically and can intuit patterns or solutions in an instant. But to think that this alone is mastery would be naive. Instead, mastery is a combination of this higher form of intelligence and the ability to subject these insights to a high degree of reflection and reasoning. Quote, "This is hard for us to imagine because we find intuition and rationality mutually exclusive. But in fact, at this level, they operate together in a seamless fashion. The reasoning of masters is guided by intuition. Their intuition springs intensely from rational focus. The two are fused." End quote. There's just one more thing that we need for mastery. Self-confidence. With these elements in our arsenal, we will be able to forge our own path in our area of study. And when we finally reach this point, we have reached mastery. I want to thank you for spending this time with me today, going over this lovely life note moving you one book closer to a 12-category smart life. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. I look forward to bringing you more wisdom next month and every month thereafter as we explore the 12 categories. This is Jordan River signing off, saying, have an extraordinary day, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.